Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 245 and 2 Zigzag.
That's an Afro Man Colt 45 and 2 Zigzag.
Baby, that's all I need.
Didn't he just get in like a big legal thing here in Colorado and...
He won.
Yeah, and like won the shit out of it.
Yeah, that whole thing was hilarious.
Like in like an American flag suit or something. I don't know if that part's true, but
no, he was definitely like he was wearing like
Afro Man stuff.
Yeah, he showed up on brand.
That's how confident he was. He showed up on brand. He didn't even like try to dress up to act like he needed that extra boost. So we were just talking before the show started that shit's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Matt, you want to go? You want to talk about any fire? Like, I don't know. Our air quality.
You guys have like almost no fires. We have lots of fires. You guys have like two or three little baby ones.
I don't know. The one out by Pueblo it went over 50,000 acres today.
We got some 100,000 ones over here.
You know, the crazy thing about that one was that it was reported and then 6 hours later, it was 28,000 acres.
Wind is a crazy thing.
Yeah, like it came out of the mountains into the plains and just fucking ran.
I think that's what people don't understand is if you, I guess, had a wildfire going and it wasn't that windy, it's probably not going to move that fast. Yeah. But you have 60 mile an hour winds and it is unreal. And that almost took out Boulder pretty much, right? A couple years ago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the Louisville fire, I think it was, or Thornton fire. I can't remember what it was called.
Know.
Yeah, so it looks like Kenny has, in his state, about 200,000 acres on fire. Maybe, what are these guys? Nah, closer to 250, and we've got about 100. So.
Yeah, there's one up by Leadville, which sucks.
But how close is the closest fire to you, Kenny?
There was a little baby Bonneville one. But that got put out pretty quick because it was fairly close to civilization. So they clearly are going to have way more resources on that. Cherry Creek, where I ride moto a lot and have talked about it, that's all gone now. So that's a bummer. That's pretty close. That's like an hour, 45 minutes away, somewhere in that ballpark. So within 45 minutes, there were two massive fires, like almost 100,000 acres apiece. They're mostly under control now. And then way down south, the Cottonwood fire is pretty gnarly. I think that's pretty much the biggest one and probably the one that's going to threaten the most structures and all that kind of stuff. Not like humongous suburban neighborhoods necessarily, but lots of cabins. I think it took out like part of a resort, ski resort, something along those lines. I'm not super familiar with it, but it's not good. Definitely not good.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to just like one up you, I promise. We're unfortunately in this like sort of
a ring of fire.
I was going to say there's sort of like there's the big Leadville fire, which is called the Willow Fire. And it's not that big, but it is on this side of the Continental Divide, like the east side of the divide. And the Aspen Fire, which is 55,000 acres, is down.
Aspen Acres.
So I see the Aspen Fire. Where is... Is it the Willow Fire you're talking about?
Yeah.
Willow Fire is the smaller one by Leadville, and the Aspen Acres Fire is the one that just blew up to 28,000 acres in 6 hours.
Gotcha. Oh, the Willow Fire is just a little baby. That's 2,000 acres. That's like one of our
what
backyards.
I was trying to get at is what we're running into is the wind is holding that smoke against the divide, and it's just... My eyes hurt.
Yeah, sometimes. Wildfire smoke is really bad. It was pretty bad here for a few days. And then one day, all the way down from the Cottonwood Fire, which is damn near in St. George. So it's 3 hours away from us.
Oh, we had bad smoke from the Cottonwood Fire.
Yeah, and a wall. It did go east, so I think you did get some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could tell that was some of that Utah smoke. But anyway, one of the days, it was an actual wall that you could watch, and it looked like Armageddon. It was the craziest goddamn shit. You can probably search for pictures of it if you're bored. It was from about a week ago.
Oh, we had like a few years ago, like it was actually the summer after late summer after we moved into this house. There was a fire close to here. We were under pre-evacuation and driving up our road just with the wind conditions,
mm-hmm.
It was raining ash.
Yeah. Yeah. This looked like in Memphis, you used to get those really defined thunderstorm clouds that would come through that were just black and, you know, super tornadic looking. It was like that, except it was a wall of smoke. Because it was perfectly, you know, birds chirping, blue skies on one side, and then on the other, it was a wall with a defined line. It just looked surreal.
Yeah. Fires are crazy.
They're crazy. So, yeah, anyway, lots of shit on fire. It's really hot out, and there's not a lot of water. That's the problem.
And I don't think any of our listeners need to hear this, but you don't need a campfire, even if conditions are okay.
Like, in our reality, you never need a campfire.
You just, unless it's like, unless you're hypothermic and you need it to survive, just, you don't need a campfire.
There's probably snow around at that point.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty safe to say
that
if you're doing some, like, alpine hot tent camping and you're literally in snow, probably okay to make a fire. I don't think you're going to hurt anything.
Yeah. Just put it out. Like, people don't understand when you put a fire out. A campfire, an outdoor fire of any sort, it's not out until you can touch where the fire was. Once you can put your hand where the fire was and keep it there and not get burnt and not feel really any heat, that's when the fire's out. Like, you should be able to put your hand where there was fire and be okay. That's a good rule of thumb. But we should get on with the rest of the show. It doesn't have to just be the wildfire episode.
Yeah, and it's obvious that people cause a lot of these fires. However, they're not all people. So, you know,
yeah,
there have
always.
Been
sometimes it's
there have been wildfires forever. But it's just not good conditions right now.
The one close to us was dry lightning. So there was like a thunderstorm, but like none of the rain actually fell. It just lightninged and caught shit on fire, and then it just spread because it was windy.
Yeah, hopefully we're not going to do anything too stupid. Utah is in love with fireworks, and people are arguing that it's their right to burn the state down right now. So we're going to see how that goes.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's so funny that people get that cranky about that stuff. And I get it. I get the whole, like, you can never, ever tell me what to do. It's like, well, you know what? Sometimes somebody in charge should tell you what you need to do, and then you should just listen to that because it's the smart thing to do, whether it's the law or not. Like, come on. We do fireworks every year. We typically light a bunch of shit on fire accidentally with those fireworks every year. But this year is kind of not the year to do that. That's all there is to it. You can do it next year. Like, if maybe it rains a little bit, and then you can go fucking bananas and, you know, stick Roman candles in your ass and do whatever you're going to do. That's fine. But like, this year is not the year. And it's just hilarious to me that people get so goddamn bent out of shape because it's, you can never tell me what to do. I can't believe the government's going to tell me I can't do that. It's like, the government's telling you can't do that right now, this one time, because we don't want to kill everybody.
Or I stopped listening when you said that they said that I couldn't.
So anyway, I wish people could have common sense. And hey, I'm all for, I totally get it, you know, rights are important. But you know what? Sometimes there's a collective time when you should just listen.
Well, if everyone had common sense, we wouldn't need a fucking government.
Common sense is not a common commodity. Moving on.
All right.
When talking about my week, I've done nothing really interesting, except we're starting to set the national at Turkey Rock, and I used my Jeep to pull some rabbit brush, and doing redneck stuff
what
is really fun.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Do you know what rabbit brush is?
No, I do love all the terms you guys have for shit over there that I've never heard of before. All kinds, like, different,
I mean,
versions.
Rabbit brush is a
different versions of ravines and clearings and, you know, scree fields and all the shit that is just crazy. So can you explain to me / the listeners what the fuck a rabbit hole is?
Rabbit brush.
Mm-hmm. And according to this map we're looking at, it is in Utah.
Yep.
I've never seen it.
You just don't know. Y'all probably call it something like dirty Dr. Pepper holder or something, because fucking Utah.
Like, is it like scrub brush?
I mean, you could probably just say that and someone might know what you're talking about. Just look.
I'm just fascinated that this is such a specific. All right.
Type in the search bar.
I mean, it's not that specific. I'm on the USDA/US Forest Service Department of Agriculture website, and the plant of the week was the rubber rabbit brush. Come on, Miss Science Brain.
Is this the Chrysothalmus?
Ericomeria?
Nauseosa?
Yeah.
You had to use your Jeep to rip that stuff up? That looks like, it's like a little flower.
Oh, dude, I want you to do this the next time you're out.
Try to pull one up.
No, better than that. I want you to find one about 4 feet tall, and I want you to be like, ha, 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 that's a bitch, and I want you to third gear into it on the Husky.
That's like a, it's like a tree that's shaped like a bush, okay?
Look, that motherfucker, the one I, the most satisfying one that I pulled up was probably 6 feet tall, four-ish feet around at the base, maybe 5 feet wide. And when I pulled it out, it took multiple attempts. And the taproot on that was probably 3 inches in diameter. And it tapered down over like 24 inches before it broke off at about the size of my thumb. So maybe inch-ish in diameter. There's some hardy little son of a bitches.
Yeah, stuff that grows where there's not much water. That shit grows some fucking roots.
And yeah, I did that. It was pretty cool.
Like, I was helping Matt clear some cactus out of some of the areas they're going to use for the Nationals, and I just had a rake and just, like, kind of dug the rake under a little, I don't know, it was maybe like a foot across, like, patch of cactus. And as I pulled on it, the root started coming out from under, like, various rocks and shit, and it was probably 4 feet long. It wasn't very thick.
No, it was you know,
like a pencil size.
No, it was probably about the size of the 3 mil shift housing. Like, it was really spindly.
Yeah, but it was just this long root, and it just kept going. And occasionally, like every 1 to 2 feet, it would have some more little cactuses growing off of it.
It's not long, but it sure is thin.
Anyways, that's my week, I'm trying to see if there's anything else. I don't have to do the, oh, wait, dude. And then everybody makes fun of me because I'm fucking tired of it. Do have one more. I'm going to see really quick. Urban Aero. So we got in one of the Urban Aero cargo bikes for customer today. Actually, it got delivered, I don't know, but it finally got assembled today. You know, it's a...
It's one with the big cargo thing, like a couple of kids can sit in the front. Like, your kid and all of your groceries for a week can go in the front of this thing.
Yeah, so it's the Urban Aero Family Next is the bike. Fucking yes.
It's like a tandem wheelbase.
And it's the kind with the bucket in the front and linkage steering. And it dawned on me that you could ride that down the boat ramp. And at the bottom of the boat ramp, with a little timing practice with your buddy, you could slam on the brakes with a countdown to when you're stopping, and they could launch themselves out of the front bucket, diving headfirst into the river. And we did it. I have no idea what the wheelbase is. They have the absolute worst website ever.
Yeah, that website is not made for people that care anything about bikes. It's just about, like, how many kids you can carry.
And... it's like every time you scroll down, like, a new thing, a new little, like, embedded player starts playing, and, like, something fucking, like, it expands, and, like, let me start moving this slideshow of multiple auto-played videos, like you're on fucking Instagram stories. Like, jeepers, creepers, Jiminy Christmas. Yeah. They're cool. They're expensive. They do build themselves as a car replacement, and they have a car price tag. They're like $8,700 the way this one was configured.
All right, Kenny, what have you been doing?
Let's see. I rode some moto on Sunday. Yeah, I think it was on Sunday. It was oddly cold here. I think it was a high of 60 degrees in Salt Lake. It had been hot all previous week, but some weather moved in, and it was, like, actually cold. So I decided it would be good to go into the desert, because I thought it would be a little bit warmer, and that was a mistake, because it was really fucking hot. Usually, on normal, like, winter time, if it's 40 degrees, for example, in Salt Lake, it might be like 50 or 60 in Green River / Moab area. It's 10 or 20 degrees warmer. And I guess this one wasn't that far off, but yeah, so 60 degrees here-ish, maybe 65. And in the morning, it was like 50. And I start driving, going down Highway 6, as usual. And I pop out in Price, which is where it gets pretty deserty. And it was like 89 degrees. And I was like, son of a bitch, this is not what I wanted to do. And then I get to my actual parking spot another hour later, and it was 100. So, oops. But it was still enjoyable.
Better ride fast.
Yeah. So I scoped out a new spot It's between the Green River Missile Launch Site and Moab. Probably closer to Moab, to be honest. It's pretty close to the Moab Airport. So if people want to semi-stalk where I was, that's where I was. And I found some cool old single track. It's desert single track, so like, you know, you can take single track with a grain of salt. You could take lots of different lines if you wanted to, but there is kind of like a moto-sized track in the desert. But yeah, it was cool. I'm guessing this was probably made in the 80s or 90s, somewhere in that zone, because it didn't have tons of huge big moves for like modern enduro bikes, even though it's called the Enduro Loop. But it did have a couple big moves, which is pretty neat. But other than that, it was pretty chill, very disused for sure. And I didn't see a single other person, which is good and bad. It was pretty far out there. I think at one point I saw a side-by-side, but that was really it. And I did like a 50 or 60 mile loop. It was a good day. I'm trying to think of anything else of note. Yeah. The Husky 350. Still doing really good. There was, yeah, one pretty gnarly section. And I decided against doing the whole thing because, yeah, I was by myself and I was way out in the middle of nowhere. And where it popped out, it looked like there was not a way back to the main trail. So I decided against it. But very doable. It'll be fun to go out there with other people because, yeah, totally doable. Lots of traction. It definitely takes some commitment. But yeah, what else? I feel like there was something else. Well, it'll probably come to me, but that's it. It was fun day. Just 30 degrees warmer than I thought it was going to be. Andrea?
Just been working on Matt's mule deer hide that's been stuffed in a bucket full of salt for the past 4 years, 3 years.
I don't know, a long time.
It's been a while. I'm trying to make a hair off buckskin hide for the first time. So that's what I've been engrossed with. I talked about the Rainbow Trail ride I did, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Man, I need to get back out and ride. It's been a minute. I'm trying to think of like what I've been doing other than shit around the house, and it's nothing. Just been doing shit around the house. Had I gone camping when we recorded last? I don't think I'd gone camping.
I don't remember you camping.
I went out to Marshall Pass, spent the night out there.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was like really, I think that was over the weekend. Yeah, because there were like a bunch of people. Yeah, that was over the weekend. That was fun. I went to an area I've been to some and just wanted to do some like elk scouting and saw some moose. And oh yeah, I was trying to call in like right when I was almost back to the truck. I was maybe like half a mile from the truck. I heard this pack of coyotes and I had like my binocular harness because I was out elk scouting and I have a pistol because I was out in the woods and I was like, well, I can just get my elk call out of here and make a sound like a lost elk calf and see if I can. It's always coyote season. See if I can call a coyote. Probably not. Probably it's pretty difficult to get them within pistol range, but you know, if I just saw one, that would be kind of cool. So I called and called and because you kind of have to like, I mean, a lost elk calf, like they make a bunch of noise. They get frantic. So you make them make noise, frantic elk noises. And then I was quiet for a second and a freaking bull elk bugled at me from like the opposite direction while I was just right there in the woods. So that was pretty cool. Didn't see the coyotes, did see another moose. And then I went to a different spot to kind of like do some glassing right at sunset. And when I got up to this kind of rock outcropping where I was going to sit and look around with my binoculars, there was a cow and calf elk like, I don't know, 50 yards away from me. Just like the calf like hopped up out of the bushes. The cow was just kind of looking at me. And then they kind of trotted off in the woods. So that was cute. But that's really all I've done. I need to go do something fun tomorrow. I need to get out of the house.
All right. Are we ready to talk about new shit?
Yeah, let's talk about some new shit.
Sure.
Okay. Can I rapid fire a couple just to make fun of certain aspects of them?
Sure.
And then
yeah, sure.
Get into something I care about. So Twin Six is launching a 32-inch gravel bike.
To which I said, I didn't know Twin Six was still a thing.
And I was like, yeah. I think we kind of only knew about Twin Six because so many mountain bike radio people were from the Midwest and they talked about it. I don't know.
Well, they sponsored a couple of people that did like the endurance races.
Yeah, but I don't know if Twin Six is still making mountain bikes. I'll find out right now.
They are now.
That's not a mountain bike. That's a drop bar gravel bike.
whatever. It looks like a mountain bike.
That's it. So.
Are those aspens on it in the first picture?
That's the only fucking. I don't know. There's not a lot of 32s. Oh, I guess they do still make a Thai mountain bike. Anyways, let's see. So there's that. Then there's the new Tarmac SL9. I don't know a lot about it. But one thing that I will really push on here is Bike Rumor asks, how far can you push a single model before it becomes unrecognizable or alienates its core audience? What? And they have a picture of like an old ass Tarmac with rim brakes and let's see. I mean, it's old enough that it has a bike computer zip tied to the fork. God, that's probably like a 2006 Tarmac or something. And I know that bikes progress faster than cars, but like look at an 84 Civic versus a 2020 Civic. They're not the same fucking car.
Well, I mean, you could say that about
everything.
A lot of bikes. I mean, we've had this discussion before about how like Trek has, like the Top Fuel is a different, that is something you could say. How far can you push a single model?
No, absolutely not. I'm going to cut you off hard. This is their fastest road bike they make.
Okay.
The Top Fuel used to be their race bike, and now it's a trail bike. That's different.
I know, and so it's unrecognizable and alienated its core audience.
No, it hasn't. The Top Fuel changed what it was. They called a Top Fuel, the 100 High Post XC bike was a Top Fuel. Then they released a heavy ass bike two generations later that none of their cross country racers are racing. It's not a Top Fuel anymore, but they're still calling it a Top Fuel. That'd be like if it was like Civic was a sedan. Civic is now a CRV. Like, no, it's not a Civic anymore. It's a crossover. It's not a sedan. Like, this is still a fast road bike. I'm sorry if old people can't wrap their head around the fact that fast bikes now have big tires and disc brakes, but like it's still their race bike. Like the Top Fuel is not Trek's race bike anymore.
Okay. I'm not going to continue trying to explain myself because it obviously made you very mad when I said
no, like you made an argument where someone did. They did not push a model. Like Trek did not advance the Top Fuel model. They recycled a name onto a new bike they made. Like, this is still a Tarmac.
So, I guess what argument I'm not following, what argument are you making, or what argument is Bike Rumor or whoever else that you're
They're
referencing?
Trying to say what Andrea is saying, that, like, when you change a bike, it shouldn't be that bike anymore. Like, no.
No,
like,
I mean, I would definitely, I mean, I got no skin in the game either way here, but, I mean.
Oh, Mr. S200 has no skin in the game on what shit's called?
Yeah, I do in that case. But in this case, I mean, I guess I agree with you, Matt. I mean, it's more about, I mean, yeah, of course it's going to look different, but its purpose is supposed to be the, you know, everyman race bike is not the right word. It's their not full dork arrow, like Venge style bike. It's their road race bike. Like it's the bike that road racers are going to ride. Like that's it.
But they don't make the Venge anymore.
I know. But I mean at its core I think it still is what it's always been, which is their most techie road race bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like comfortable enough that it could be your daily road bike, but racy enough that you could like do clearly a Tour de France on it, right? So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's being true to itself.
I mean in this world, like talking within the Specialized lineup, like if you were to compare a 2006 Tarmac and a 2026 Athos, they look very similar. Like they're both roundish tube, regular-ish looking road bikes, like classic road bikes. But the Tarmac has always been their race bike, so they keep calling it their race bike, which is the Tarmac.
Sure.
Like, right? Like,
I guess I just don't see a problem. I don't know.
Hey, I don't know, like, and that's what I'm getting at. Like,
I was trying to say that statement is dumb to make about this bike. Like, before you said I'm going to cut you off hard, I was about to say that statement doesn't make sense in this respect. So, fuck you.
So, I think we're all agreeing that the Tarmac has always been the Tarmac, and it's looked a little bit different, and maybe it fits bigger tires. Like, I don't know. It's their fucking race bike. What's the big deal? It's always been their race bike. But I would also, yeah. I would definitely agree that, you know, the Top Fuel lost its way and certain other things have lost its way where it's not the core product that it used to be, and they really just leaned on the name. For example, the E-Mustang or whatever the fuck that thing is. That's not a Mustang.
Oh, my God.
That's some universal platform mini SUV electric thing. It's not a goddamn Mustang. But I'm not going to be upset that, like, I would still put a Fox Body Mustang in the same breath as, like, the latest normal gas Mustang. Yeah, of course they look different. And, of course, the modern one performs better in every single way. But, like, at their core, it's the same car.
Ooh. Until some redneck throws a bunch of money in an LS in one and then makes it move down the drag strip like it's got fucking, I don't know, gecko feet and methamphetamine fuel in it.
Yeah, people did like to make those things sketchy. But anyway, I don't know. I think that the Tarmac is the same as the actual real Mustang, where, of course, it's changed over time and it's had a whole bunch of different models, a whole bunch of different generations. But at its core, it's not trying to be something different.
Yeah, a quickie because it's road stuff. New Zip 404 S's were released. So that's their affordable 50 millimeter deep wheel. They are 50 deep, 23 internal, 253 pounds or 115 kilogram system weight, under 1600 grams, $1,300 retail. It's pretty dope.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the market for people buying wheels for bikes is very small these days, unfortunately.
Gone.
Stuff just comes with such nice stuff. Look at this. I mean, it's the S-Works, right? But look at this Tarmac. Could you get a different wheel for it? Sure. But why the fuck would you spend $3,000 to get wheels that are the same performance as the Rovals? Like, that's dumb. So, anyway, bikes come with really nice wheels for the most part these days, unless you're talking some entry-level shit. So the market for multi-thousand-dollar aftermarket wheels is very small. It still exists, clearly. And some people will buy them for whatever reason, but it's not like it used to be where you had a bike and it was the kind of the best of the best, and then you bought Zips for it. That's just not a thing anymore.
Yeah, and to drive that home even better, like if you go back in time, really, really, really nice road bikes would come with like a $300 wheel set, and it'd be like, mm-hmm.
Hey, you just ride those all the time, and then you had a set of race wheels.
Yeah, like... It was like, cool, choose your own adventure. You know, like, legally, bikes have to come with wheels. So they're like, here you go, it rolls now.
Yeah, this is not a dig on Zip. It's a dig on, well, it's not really a dig. It's just the unfortunate situation of the Zips and the Envies and all these other aftermarket wheels of the world. And also as a shop, maybe you see the same thing, but we have a whole shitload of wheel sets and we display a lot of them, but... We don't just sling expensive aftermarket wheel sets anymore. It's just not a thing.
Mm-mm. And, you know, used to, wheels really were bad. They were really bad.
They were really bad. Yeah, I agree.
And now, how do I put this? Like, pretty okay wheels are really, really, really nice.
Oh,
now.
Like mid-tier wheels are really good.
Yeah, like I have 303 S's on my gravel bike, and they're just like, I mean this in the nicest way possible. I've never thought about them. You know, I put them on the bike. They set up tubeless just fine. The rotors went on just like they're supposed to. The lock ring or the free hub goes on. Cassette goes on the free hub just fine. Everything's fine. Ride the wheels. They ride great. You know, the bike's fine. And I just keep saying fine because I have made the joke. The best trail work is the trail work that you never notice it happened. And like the best bike part is a bike part you don't notice. Like if you put something new on your bike and you don't notice it, that's probably a good thing. Like I've had dropper levers before that the dropper lever was kind of hard to push sometimes. And sometimes you'd have to like think about doing it just so. And you put a different lever on there and you're just like brain tells thumb, thumb moves lever, seat goes down with butt. Didn't really think, you know. So when you don't have to think about it, it's usually a good sign. So I haven't found how much an SL9 costs yet. Do they only launch the S-Works one? Oh, if you want an SL9 today, you got to buy Swerks. Oh, my God. By gall. That's a $5,800 frame set.
God damn. Do you happen to have... Is it Bike Rumor that you have pulled up?
I turned that into the Specialized site so I could actually look at what they're selling.
Gotcha. It's just funny. I'm just looking at the picture of... It's just the red S-Works, and it's in like a middle of the road in a very brightly lit photo. You know, see if you can find that one.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
So if you click on any photo, you can then photo album it and just like scroll through.
If I can find the right article, because there's two articles.
Oh, gotcha. For what it's worth, the URL of this one is SL9 drops just in time for Tour de France.
There it is, finally. Okay, what's up?
So scroll through those pictures until you get to that red bike. The red S-Works just in the middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny. I was just looking at that, and it's, you know, clearly hovering. And it's funny because you've got the shadow of the person holding the bike, and they photoshopped him out. And where his thumb was touching the tire, it's just got a big old bite taken out of the tire. It's just funny.
Or is that his shadow in the tire? Because
it doesn't matter.
No, it does matter. The way that you take that photo, Kenny, because it was, I think it was Pink Bike, that there was a person taking photos of someone taking photos of the pro bike, and the mechanic would hold it by the back wheel and go 3, 2, 1, and then.
But look at the shadow. The guy's arm is still touching the tire. Look at the shadow on the pavement.
Okay, never mind. You know.
Can we talk about these hope breaks?
Sure. I didn't find them, so where would I find said hope breaks? Is that on Bike Rumor too? Do I have to go back through the Bike Rumor website?
Yep, it's from June 26th.
Oh my god, that's so long ago.
A Hope Evo V6 tie.
One of those got stolen from their booth.
Did they ever find it? So, I did read that article.
I mean, that is, it's serialized like 001 or something.
It's serial number one.
That's just on somebody's shelf,
I guess.
Like,
so it's a 6-piston caliper, and the special edition mono caliper is machined out of a single block of aluminum. Is it aluminum? Pretty sure it's aluminum.
It's got to be.
Only 1,000 sets. They're all numbered.
So 999
yeah.
sets.
It has a 3.3 millimeter thick slotted rotor, and you have to use a special adapter to mount it to your bike.
And it doesn't use multiple pads. It's got one giant pad.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty sexy. I don't know if it's like, I think it's kind of like looking at a downhill bike. It's like, well, that's pretty cool, but I don't need that.
It was really funny reading the comments on that where some people chimed in when the first gen 6-piston came out from Hope, like 20 years ago, whenever it came out. And all these people were like so excited that, you know, they got this thing. And everyone said it was fucking terrible, that they were so disappointed. They spent huge money and they said it was terrible.
What is this thing in this picture?
That is the brake pad cover.
Okay, okay. So that like goes on the...
I mean, when you have 6 pistons, you know, you got like a foot of real estate where I'm assuming your extra $100 bills could potentially fall into your caliper.
Yeah.
God, vintage.
Those rotors are fucking wild. That looks like some motorcycle shit.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it's really cool. It's like a cool thing, but like, I don't know.
They even say that it like doesn't make any more power than their normal quad piston stuff. Somewhere it said that.
I didn't read that much. I just looked at the pictures because they're pretty.
I just don't know. Even your power thing aside, Kenny, like, I just don't want weird stuff. Like, I can't wait until like 2 years from now. Some guy's like, "Hey, do you have a 3.3 millimeter rotor?" And they're like, "Wait,
do you have pads for this?"
Are you talking about like a TRP 2.3 rotor? No, it's a 3.3 from Hope. A what? Yeah, I only need the outer.
I wonder how much those rotors cost. I mean, if you get a set of these brakes, it's like $1,940.
Oh my god. You could buy a used, like, shitty vehicle for that. It would have brakes on it. Anyways, yeah. Can we talk about these one-up wheels?
Sure.
One-up hubs, one-up rims, front and rear proprietary, so rear rim has more material to be more durable. They are available in 29 or mullet. Front is 28-hole, rear is 32-hole. And they retail for $600. They have a traditional warranty, but they offer crash replacement. So if you have ever broken a wheel before, which means you're buying wheels, because like we talked about 12 minutes ago, you don't need to buy wheels anymore. Don't buy these. Just don't. If you've broken a wheel, hold on, let me... If you've broken a wheel, you may be entitled to breaking another wheel in the future. So if you spend $100 more, you can get 350 DEG hubs with Santa Cruz rims that have a lifetime warranty. And for their aluminum wheels, the warranty is, if it doesn't hold air, we'll give you a new rim. And let's just say that you had a rim, hypothetically speaking, that could no longer be trued. Kenny, do you think you could make that wheel no longer hold air?
Well, yeah, sure.
Andrea, do you think you could make that wheel no longer hold air?
Absolutely.
If you're out there in listener land and you're like, what are they talking about? Maybe you just have a slow leak. Maybe you enter a rock garden at 20 miles an hour at 15 PSI. Maybe suddenly the rim doesn't hold the tire on anymore. Just saying, like, Santa Cruz made it really easy for you to cash that warranty in. If you don't know how to let out some air and rally into a square edge rock or the curb, I don't know what to tell you. So, and these are considerably heavier than the
everything.
So, yeah, I don't think I would buy one of those. You know what I do want to buy, but I'm not going to because there's no way I would keep all this clean and actually do something good with it. Hydropack's new fuel kit. It is seriously stupid and seriously cool.
Where are you supposed to hold those soft things when you're on a bike?
You're not. Those are, so that's a run pouch. That is a gummy bear reusable pouch. This pouch comes, or these two pouches on the outside of the bike groomer photo are designed for soft or powdered items. So like you could put cookies in there. You could put drink mix in there.
Okay.
And then deeper into the kit, you get a little funnel that fits onto the top of all bottles so you can pour drink mix directly out of the thing, the kind of like bladdery things, or you can use the scoop that's included, and it's really cool.
It is cool, but man, that is a lot of shit. I know they give you a bag of whatever, a caddy that holds all of that.
Yep.
But holy fuck, like that's a lot of parts.
I know.
And a lot of stuff to clean and not lose. And
I know. I said I wanted one. Yeah. I didn't say I'm getting one.
I know. It's a cool idea in theory, but I think that it's a lot of moving parts.
Yep. All right. Oh, you want to talk about the Trek 32er?
Not really. It's such a dumb headline. Like, did Trek just hide a 32-inch race bike in its own documentary? Okay, first off, if they didn't, quote, unquote, heavy on that part, hide a new 32-inch race bike in their own documentary about their history, who the fuck is ever going to watch that video? That's the only way they could get anyone to click on that video and watch any amount of that video.
I mean, I think I called this a long time ago. Travis Brown, who works for Trek, is all about it. So,
and like, no, they're not hiding anything. If they show it to you in their video, it's not, they're not hiding it. Don't do this shit. Ooh, spy shots. It's like some manicured fucking photo and they call it a spy shot. Get fucked. I'm grouchy. If you haven't noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Like tonight or in general?
Yes.
Yes, that is the answer. It's just yes. You guys have more new shit? Those are all the things that I thought were cool.
Yeah, the only thing really on my radar is this crazy, I don't even know, the Opus, the telepathy Opus, or telepathy, however you want to pronounce that. It's that 180 mil constant wheelbase bike. It just looks insane, that's all. It's got so many idlers. This one is on Pink Bike. So Opus, O-P-U-S.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
That is fucking weird.
There's a lot of parts to that thing.
Yeah. Got an upper idler? Yep. Got a lower idler? Yep.
Motherfucking two chains. They were so close. Why didn't they just double up the upper idler? You know, just make it a true two-chain bike like the demo.
It's a good question. Yeah,
they
anyway.
They tried it and it just didn't work.
46 pounds without pedals. Holy Christ. This is also a $5,600 frame, which if you compare it to the new Tarmac SL9, if you looked at it like a grocery store, like price per pound, this is way cheaper.
I like that all this stuff exists, and I like that people are trying to think outside the box. The problem to me is, at the end of the day, this is a bike that you kind of sort of need to pedal. It's not a full-blown DH bike. I guess people are mostly going to just lift run this bike. But if it's designed to be pedaled, it's going to be incredibly heavy and sap all of your power with all this crazy angles and extra idlers and all this stuff. So I just don't. It's a cool engineering exercise that you can do whatever you want with the suspension kinematics and maybe make it ride a little better downhill. But it kind of doesn't become a analog pedal bicycle anymore, in my opinion. So I just don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure when you turn the pedals, it goes forward.
Yeah. but probably in the same way that a DH bike pedals when you pedal it. I mean, it kind of does on paper, but I don't think anyone's actually doing that. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, it's cool stuff. I'm not fully poo-pooing it, but it's just real world application. How practical is it? That's the problem. Because it might ride amazing, but if you can't pedal it, is it a bicycle anymore? It's just weird to me. That's all.
I mean, like I said, you can pedal it. You can push on the pedals and it will move forward at a speed greater than 0 miles per hour.
Only other thing on my list here. Did we talk about it on the last show? The ECVT mid-drive motor from Avanox?
No.
Okay.
No, we didn't.
Well, anyway, we don't need to go into the details on that thing. It's a prototype. I truly do believe that this technology probably specifically will be the future of e-bikes. I really do think that because it solves so many problems. These e-bikes are making so much more power. Like, let's forget about the legal versus not legal thing. Let's just say that in Tomorrowland, everyone just rallies behind 1500 watt e-bikes. We've talked about it a whole bunch on the show. Bicycle drivetrains are not designed for that shit. It's so bad. I have customers come in every day with Gen 4 Levos that make half that power. And it happened with Comos and Vados, the city bikes, where people just park it in the 10 tooth and then rip it apart.
That's what I was about to say is if you look through this photo, notice how big the rear cog is.
Yep. So I truly, truly, truly think this is the future because if you're going to put down power, you cannot do it through a fucking Eagle chain. No offense to SRAM. You can't do that through a 10 tooth with 1500 watts. It'll do it in the parking lot and probably not pop and skip when it's brand new. But guess what? Unfortunately, 50% of these owners of these e-bikes, no shit, they'll just click it down in the 10 tooth and pedal at a 20 cadence because the bike will do it and it goes forward quickly. And then they rip the ass end out of the drivetrain. They drag that stump of a piece of shit back into me. And they're like, my bike doesn't work anymore. And I'm pissed off. And I'm like, God damn it. And I got to explain to them why their $15,000 bike is broken after 200 miles. And
wait. I want to throw in a story that's this same story, but totally different. It was
about my first mountain bike.
It's about a customer's mountain bike. Let's see. Just fucking search. Yeah, that's the bike.
I remember. I know who you're going to talk about now.
So it's probably 2011, 2012. Guy comes in. He's got a Cannondale Trail 6. And he's like, yeah, da-da-da. And the 11-tooth cog is just smoked.
And he's like, my chain is popping.
And no shit. You probably could have taken that 11-tooth cog off. And if you'd propped it up, like in the street, you could have got like 7 flat tires on cars passing by, like just from looking at it. This thing, this was some like serious shit. And I remember Kenny's just standing there and he's like short circuiting Kenny.
Because all the rest of the gears worked perfectly.
The other 8 on the,
like,
or the
test rode it and we're like, what the fuck is going on?
And I remember Kenny was like, hey man, how are you riding your bike? And the guy was like, yeah, just use this one over here on the left. That's the only shifter you need. So he was just riding.
Shifting the front and keeping the chain on the 11.
Yeah, he's like, okay, I'll use the 22, 32, 42, and fuck it. 11, we ball.
So I see that stuff. Kenny? I don't remember that one specifically. I've seen so much fucked up shit in my days as a bike mechanic. I try to suppress all that stuff so I don't lose it.
Yeah, that one was good. No, like my first mountain bike, I took it to Shelby Forest in Memphis. This is in 2009. It was a Jet 9.
Got aluminum.
The aluminum Jet 9.
Hold on.
I had all the nice like XO.
9 speed.
Yeah, XO 9 speed. And
did it have formula brakes?
At some point, I think it started with Avids or something. And I went down this thing that was a trail. And then it started to not be a trail. And I just kept riding through all this grass and vines and poison ivy and fucking mosquitoes and swamp. And all that shit wrapped up around my rear cog and in my rear derailleur and just ripped that motherfucker off. It was like my first or second ride on the bike. I was like, damn, I thought this was made to go off-road.
Yeah.
And I had to just push that thing out because I didn't have a hanger with me.
Hold on. It gets better. the lady that bought that bike from you is a customer.
I know.
Like,
I mean, sometimes I learn lessons the hard way.
Most of the lessons you've learned have been the hard way.
Yeah, that's true.
So the moral of that story is I truly think that this mid-drive motor is the solution, because pinions and gearboxes and all that kind of shit that they've tried in the past, they're clunky to shift. They might not shift under power. They're heavy. They're loud. They're super inefficient. They're big. All the things. Like, they're just not good. Paper and in theory, it seems like they could work, but they just don't. But the ECVT situation, I truly think that's going to be the way to go. And we're going to end up with e-bikes how they're kind of supposed to be, which is not having a goddamn rear derailleur and not having a skinny-ass little chain on a 13-speed drivetrain that hangs 1 inch off the ground when you have a mullet. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, I did. I don't remember if I talked about it or not. I rode my e-bike up a power line road, and the last, 100 yards was just nasty. Like, they blasted the road into the mountain pretty much, and it was just rock that had just, it was like crumbling, like the side where they, you know, like the tall side, the wall side was just crumbling into the rest of the road. And still, like, you know, two cars go up this, or two whatever maintenance workers on four wheelers go up this like once or twice a year. So, you know, it doesn't really get traffic. And one of those rocks just like ping ponged through my rear derailleur and just bent stuff, and it shifted terrible, and it was bad.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to make longevity on these bikes way, way better. They're going to be simpler. Everything about it, I think, is going to be for the better.
I think that's cool too, that Avanox realizes that, and they are, I don't know. I'm sure there's been some other prototype and, you know, one,
I think there's one other brand that came out with one at about the same time. So it's going to be interesting to see if the other big players get to the market, or if there's some type of patent. I really don't know. But is Broza, is Bosch, is Shimano, all these people, are they going to jump on this train? And hopefully the big brands jump on the train too and start dropping. Just, we need to get rid of these mountain bike drivetrains on e-bikes. They just don't work. Sorry.
And I kind of wonder if Avanox did this based on, like, did they make a motor like their one they have now, the second gen, like the super fast whatever one?
Yep.
Like, did they in their production, in their testing, did they actually make that more powerful? And then they're like, we're going to destroy drivetrains. We can't do that. So let's send this new idea for, you know, this prototype motor they have now, let's send that over to engineering, to, you know, a different group of engineers. And then our normal ones are going to work on like finding out how powerful we can make a motor that still works most of the time with a regular mountain bike drivetrain.
It's a good question. Supposedly underneath is basically the same motor inside. It's the same 1500 watt motor. So I assume that they were just like, hey, first things first, let's come out with a motor, and it's going to be, you know, pretty decent. But to get people to run it, and it makes a little bit more power, as in 1,000 watts is the first gen. But people are going to be sketched out by it, so we're just going to have to make our own bike to showcase it. And that's what they did. And it worked out okay. And then they made the second gen, and then lots more people adopted it, and now they have this. The other takeaway is the Chinese development cycle is so much faster than everybody else's stuff. I think people need to be actually scared of Avanox. And I say scared. I think it's probably good for everyone. Like, it's going to move everybody forward. But the traditional competitors in that field, they have to be a little bit scared, unfortunately. I think the Specialized of the world, the Broza of the world, all these folks are, and I know they're scared, and rightfully so, because this speed of progression is unbelievable by these companies. Look at the Emotos. Look at the first gen Suron. Like, it's kind of a toy, but they made tons of stuff for it, and it proved that platform, and people bought the shit out of them. And then they came out with like the Ultra B, and like, there's so many new versions of Emotos that are incredibly impressive, and every single year they get markedly better and better and better and better, and no other big traditional manufacturer is doing anything near that. It's just wild. So I think that we're going to see some major, major stuff from them. And then, you know, what's going to stop them from making forks, and nothing stops them from making frames. They're already doing that. I just think we're going to see more and more high quality stuff from China.
Yeah. All right.
That's it.
We've got one listener question, and it's for me, but you guys can definitely join in. It says, two questions for Andrea. This is from Just Say No to 32 Inches. And the email address, I don't think this is a real email, so I'm going to go ahead and just read it. Van Ekren, c@ice.gov. First question, on a previous show, you discussed caffeine. Can you be more specific on how much, when, and how? And he gives some, like, milligrams per kilogram dosages higher. Assuming this is for race day performance, not everyday use, would love to hear more depth on the subject. Well, I did find an article on PubMed. They suggest that this is kind of like a review of just an overall review of what a little bit of the research, like where caffeine can help, what it can do. They do say that it can help. Benefits include, but are not limited to, muscular endurance, movement velocity and muscular strength, sprinting, jumping, throwing, as well as a wide range of aerobic and anaerobic sport-specific actions. So, like I said, pretty much everything. Aerobic endurance appears to be the form of exercise with the most consistent, moderate to large benefits from caffeine use, although the magnitude of its effects differs between individuals. I would have to say that's most likely due to just different caffeine. If you're the type of person that just drinks coffee from the time you wake up until, like, you go to bed.
Like those old people that have, like, coffee after dinner?
Yeah, like, you're going to need more caffeine in order to, or if you're slamming White Monsters all day.
If you're walking around always a little geeked out.
Yeah, so what they recommend is it improves exercise performance when consumed at doses of 3 to 6 milligrams per kilogram of body mass. Minimal effective doses are unclear, but they may be as low as 2 milligrams per kilogram. So, like, if you never have caffeine, except on race day, you can do 2 milligrams per kilogram, 3, you know, and it's probably going to be good. You're slamming are they white giving, monsters all day.
Well, quick question. Have they given we have 3 milligrams per kilo, or we have a milligram per kilogram, but do we have a dosing interval?
They do. A little lower in here, it says, most commonly used timing of caffeine supplementation is 60 minutes pre-exercise. Optimal timing likely depends on the source of caffeine.
So they're just talking about, like, kind of a one-time hit, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure in here it might have, I mean, they give a lot of different, this covers pretty much all of the bases. They do have in here somewhere very high doses, like 9 milligrams per kilogram, are associated with a high incidence of side effects and did not seem to be required to elicit an effect. So, yeah, high incidence of side effects, like I said, it will empty your digestive system from both ends if you have too much. So, you know.
Kenny, didn't you have like 1,000 or 1,200 milligrams one day?
I did. Yeah, it was kind of an accident.
And you're 65 kilos at the time, 145 pounds?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark. It was those 100 milligram per sleeve
shot blocks.
Cherry shot blocks, and I had 10 or 12 sleeves. Yeah. Yeah, that was a mistake. It was that iron butt thing, like that 100-mile deal we had in Memphis. And I was in maybe a semi-rush in the morning, and I was just keeping it simple. I had one Camelback, and I just put the entire, like, the actual retail box of the sleeves, I just put that whole thing in my Camelback. And I didn't mix it up. You know, usually I would, like, mix up flavors to, like, keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. And I knew that those were, like, the super high caffeinated ones, but it just didn't occur to me. And that's, like, all
I... You knew it all, but you never... thought of, like, you knew it all individually, but you never thought about it as, like, the collective, I'm gonna eat caffeine all day.
Yeah, it was like, I got enough shot blocks. That was how the thought went in the morning. I'm not gonna run out of shot blocks, and that's true. But yeah, that was a crazy one.
Did you run out of socks?
No, I didn't shit myself at all. I was fine, and I felt good. Like, I felt fucking strong.
Yeah, I mean, you were probably taking it at, like, the right intervals so that it just had, like, a good steady amount going. Like, if you'd eaten all of those at once, though, it probably would have ended differently.
Yeah, probably. I probably would have died.
But
But it was wild. And that I've had definitely, I mean, we've all experienced it, right? The when you go super fucking hard and you're trying to sleep that night and you whatever, you would do a 10 or 12 hour incredibly hard effort.
And your body's just like,
you
angry.
Are exhausted. I mean, you are like mentally exhausted, physically exhausted, and you can just like lay in bed and close your eyes and you think that you are going to fall asleep immediately and you don't. Like you can't sleep.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by like your body's
unrelated
angry,
to
like...
caffeine, unrelated to caffeine. Like let's say you had a normal right. amount of caffeine. You still have that, like there's a physiological thing that happens and I'm sure there's a term for it and we've all experienced it, but this one was like that. No joke. Times two or three for sure. And I was exhausted and I couldn't sleep. It was very bad. And it fucked me up for multiple days. But then I was like,
one thing they don't mention in this article that I do remember from back when I was in college learning about this stuff, women metabolize caffeine slower. I don't remember. There is like an actual number to it, but I don't remember what it is. They do metabolize caffeine slower than men. So yeah, you might have to watch out for that. You know, if you're trying to sleep, if you're working out late in the day, should probably watch out for that. You know, your tolerance for getting rid of caffeine before you need to go to bed, clearing it out of your body might be lower. So just keep that in mind. They don't have it in here, but a lot of sports science research doesn't. They just don't use women in research a lot of times. So,
well, is there a reason?
Because their response can vary according to parts of their hormonal cycle.
There we go.
Well, yeah, it doesn't mean that they don't need to be researched. Like, this is a whole review about caffeine, and they don't mention that, even though it's something that I know from fucking 20 years ago. So,
to answer not Clayton's question, I'm really good if I stay under 2 milligrams per kilogram, and I can have that's about 165 milligrams will not have any negative effect on me, and I can back that up in 2 hours time with that same dose with zero ill effect. So yeah, that's drinking like a monster at 10:30 and 12:31, and I can still sleep that night, and I can get so much shit done.
That's
including get diabetes.
It's pretty crazy that I guess the general consensus of the old interwebs is 400 milligrams over 24 hours is kind of the upper limit of normal for most people. I say normal, where you're not going to have crazy adverse effects, but that's just crazy. That's a lot. 400 milligrams of caffeine. That's crazy.
I've definitely had that during bike races, like 100-mile races.
Yeah, 10. That's 10 Cokes, which I guess is normal for some Americans. God, that's crazy.
That's really not that. I mean, I'm talking
10
about
Cokes. That's like lightweight.
No, but you wouldn't do it with 10 Cokes.
Well, the problem is a lot of people do. So not only are they getting their 400 milligrams of caffeine, they're also getting their 6 pounds of sugar, like six actual pounds.
I mean, according to, I wanted that page I got rid of. I'm trying to figure out how much coffee is in a, or how much caffeine is in a pour over. And out of spite, I don't want to use AI.
It's in that like 100 milligram ballpark.
Yeah, so when I'm doing what I've talked about, I've had 400, and I'm just like not worried. I ain't scared.
Yeah, they're saying 400, don't be scared.
So you're saying that I should try 600 this weekend?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, the other question. Ticks. What Bill Gates' lab abomination do you think this recent tick outbreak is carrying? Who's behind it? How are they suddenly showing up in mass in all of these states? Give us the skinny on what you think is up. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I don't really think that's a great conspiracy theory. I think it's people that are just uneducated about how nature works. We've had warm winters and more ticks are surviving over the winter. I mean, they can survive, but I've filmed ticks on beavers that I've pulled out of fucking ice water. Yeah. So they can survive winters if they're on a warm animal and they can reproduce, you know, without their babies dying before or their eggs dying or whatever. I don't know the tick life cycle, but the warmer the winter is, the more ticks you're going to have. That's just how things work. Like, it's like the bobcat that I had to shoot because it was about to kill all of my chickens. It was full of worms, which, yeah, animals have parasites. That's pretty fucking normal. Like, to just have a few ticks on a deer or elk or, you know, they're out in the woods. That's just what happens. They get worms, they get intestinal parasites, but the parasite load is larger when more of the parasites are able to survive the parts of the climate that would normally kill the parasites off a little bit and knock them back.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way to say, like what is more likely, that they dropped a bunch of gnarly ticks out of planes, or that the weather that we all witnessed this winter, I mean, it says South Central U.S. is not nearly as affected as the rest of the country, so...
The South Central U.S. just...
got a winter.
Yeah, they got winter, and they also, like, that's normal for them. Like, it's normal, like, if you live
like,
in
it doesn't
South,
get cold there. Like, it...
if you live in the South, or you live in Texas, or wherever, and it doesn't get... you go outside, you can get ticks mowing your fucking grass. And that's, like, a normal part of life. Like, that's always been a thing. And, yeah, like, there's... and now we have, like, the alpha-gal syndrome that makes you allergic to red meat. It's always been a thing. It's just that now you have, like, we have, like, this source of instant information. And, you know, like, the news can just cover it instantly. And it's right there in your face all the time. Like... it's always been there, and now winters are warmer, so ticks everywhere are surviving more, and there's just more of them.
I'd like to say that ticks are fucking terrible. Like, just what are. A goddamn, like, just, there's nothing worse than a goddamn tick. Maybe a leech is probably up there, but at least a leech, it would be a horrible experience to, like, rip a leech off you after you went swimming, but at least it's, like, a larger, visible, obvious thing. But, yeah, fucking ticks, god damn it. I hate those fuckers.
Yeah, I don't like them either. I've only had one attached to me since we moved to Colorado. And I kept it, I pulled it off and I kept it in a jar for like 2 months to make sure I didn't get sick and needed to like take the tick to a doctor and be like, this thing bit me and now something's wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I probably pulled 2 or 3 or 4 off of me that actually like were bit into me in Memphis, and definitely, god, I mean, I flicked and pulled so many off of me that had not actually like burrowed into me yet. God, I hate those fuckers. And I definitely got a bunch when I was a kid in New Jersey. We used to just hike through the woods and we would get ticks all the time. I fucking hate those things.
Yeah. I mean, it's just normal. Like any, like I have to say, like the past couple of years of like hunting and stuff, the number of parasites on animals of all types, like both worms inside, ticks and fleas outside, like has been astronomical. And like I said, that's normal for animals to have some of those on there. But I mean, like I quit rabbit hunting last year because like the two rabbits that I brought home they were infested with fleas. Like they were literally like the entire rabbit turned into fleas. Like it was just solid fleas all over the rabbit fur with the rabbit just like laying there. And it was, I just didn't want to deal with it. I mean, it's like we've had mosquitoes here, which is wild because it's so dry, but you know, there's enough, they reproduce with water and you know, there's a river a few miles away. So yeah, like they didn't die over the winter time. The river didn't freeze over and kill a few of the larvae off. So there's just a lot more mosquitoes. So yeah, that's just what happens when it's warm during the wintertime, is fewer of those things die. And then like more of their host animals are living over the winter. But, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I am saying that you're going to find a lot more parasites on those animals because they're just more of those parasites.
Those little fuckers can live for 2 years.
Yeah.
And they live in moist, humid environments. So if you don't have snow that freezes where they're living, then yeah. Anyways, patrons?
Yeah. I just want to say we had a patron that canceled their membership, and their patron name was Hey Girly Pop. Go ahead and throat punch them today and make sure to drink your water. Canceled their membership. But our patrons who have not canceled their membership and donate $10 or more per month. We have John, Kurt, Jim the fucked up trike guy, Burt Reynolds crusty stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds mustache, Taperboard Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Raylo from the Block,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland. Why are people still using my fucking name in Patreon? I'm a different person now. JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Chipset Coffee, We Caffeinate Colorado, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Moose Knuckle Taproom, the home of open doors and heavy pours, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Redacted, Full Face Kenny Loggins, Flying into the Danger Zone on an Amazon e-bike. At $11.11 per month, what is the difference between a garbanzo bean and a chickpea? Patamelon Disco Ball at $14 Australian. And at $20 a month, Matt and Andrea's Questionable Relations, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month, Savannah Mohawk, Harley at $30, Andrea Knows About Shit at $31, and Six Pack Outdoors, purveyors of top shelf shenanigans and gravel and cycling events at $50. That's it.
Shut her down. Wait, that's Kenny's line.
Shut her down.
Okay, right, bye.
Everyone, thank you all for listening and good night.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.